Hi, Bomb Squad. You're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb, and I'm your host, Carrie Diamond. Radio Cherry Bomb is the number one female-focused food podcast in the country. Each week, we talk to the most inspiring women in and around the world of food. Let's thank our sponsor, Handsome Brook Farm Organic Pasture-Raised Eggs. Handsome Brook Farm's secret to making rich, flavorful eggs is simple. The most possible space, the best possible feed, and lots of love. It's a healthy and humane recipe that makes your omelets, cakes, custards, and everything in between taste better. For more on Handsome Brook Farm and where to find their eggs, visit handsomebrookfarm.com. Let's talk housekeeping. We have a brand new newsletter to kick off the new year. It's called the Bomb Squad Buzz, and you can sign up for it on cherrybomb.com. Just scroll to the bottom and click newsletter to subscribe. We've got lots of special features, including our Woman of the Week, our Place of the Week, and our Book of the Week. We also include some behind the scenes from Cherry Bomb HQ, updates on Jubilee Prep, and our Dear Cherry Bomb advice column. Sign up today and get the Bomb Squad Buzz in your mailbox every Monday. And speaking of Jubilee, tickets are on sale right now at cherrybomb.com. Thanks to everyone who has already purchased tickets. We are very excited to see you on April 7th in Brooklyn. Let's talk about today's show. Our guests are two entrepreneurs, author and wellness coach Katrina Van Wyk and Matchaful Tea Company founder Hannah Habes. They were each dealing with stress-related health issues and took matters into their own hands. Katrina, a mother of two and a former model, was feeling run down all the time when she was introduced to the world of adaptogens. I'm sure you've all heard this word before, but if you haven't, adaptogens are plant-based ingredients that help the body respond to stress. Katrina is a big believer in the power of adaptogens, and she's written a new book on the subject. It's called Super Powders, Adaptogenic Herbs and Mushrooms for Energy, Beauty, Mood, and Well-Being. She's going to explain more to us about this intriguing category of the food and wellness world. And as for Hannah, I'll tell you more about her later in the show. Before we get to my interview with Katrina, we have a word from Handsome Brook Farm Organic Pasture-Raised Eggs. Handsome Brook Farm believes that organic and pastured is the way to go when it comes to eggs. Pasture-raised means better lives for hens, better lives for small farmers, and better eggs for you. It's also better for chefs who depend on rich, flavorful eggs. Handsome Brook Farm's own flock of amazing chefs, their mother hens, count on it. Janine Booth is a mother hen. She's the Australian chef behind the Southern-inspired Root and Bone restaurants in New York City and Miami. Want to learn how Chef Janine makes her sweet corn spoon bread? The ingredients include some scallions, sharp cheddar cheese, a touch of heavy cream, and of course, some Handsome Brook Farm eggs. Or if you're like me and you're obsessed with deviled eggs, you can recreate her drunken deviled eggs. She combines homemade pickled beets with Handsome Brook Farm's flavorful yolks to put a fresh, tangy spin on a classic party favorite. You can find Chef Janine's delicious, egg-centric recipes and videos on handsomebrookfarm.com. You can find Handsome Brook Farm at Publix, Kroger, Sprouts Farmers Market, Fresh Direct, and many natural food stores across the country. And now, enjoy my conversation with Katrina. So Katrina, so excited to have you on the show.
Yes, thank you for having me.
I've been able to spend a lot of quality time with you over the past week. We did a fun event at Books Are Magic.
Yes,
and thank you to everybody who came out to that. And you and I were saying how it was such a great audience because they were really engaged, they packed the place, and they had a lot of questions.
Yes, I was so impressed with their questions. It's always like, you know, people are paying attention or are truly listening when the questions are good. And there were no one on their phone.
No, not at all.
which I was like amazed by.
Absolutely. The fact that they had so many questions shows that people just in general have so many questions about this topic.
Yes.
So it was very smart of you to write a book and put it out right now.
Yeah, it was the book that I was needing, really, because there wasn't a book like this out there. There are great books on adaptogens written by herbalists for other herbalists, and the language is much heavier and more complex, and there's sort of more information maybe than most people need. So yeah, that was the point. I needed this book.
So I'm just going to go right in there and ask you, what is an adaptogen?
So an adaptogen is a plant that has the ability, when ingested, to help the body better adapt to stress. that means if you're someone who's really run down and tired, it might help give you some more energy, get you back up and running. And vice versa, if you're really kind of anxious and nervous and stressed out, it might help calm you down. So
a lot of it goes back to stress.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, you know, the modern issue for sure.
And I think we have to define stress too, because I think a lot of people just think of stress as like work stress or the stress of being a mom or financial pressures, things like that. But I'll let you talk about that. What are some other stresses that we don't even really think about or know are happening?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's sort of hard to define stress. We hear that term all the time. We all use it. Oh, I'm so stressed. But what does it really mean? And like you said, yeah, there's the typical workload stress, but there's also internal stress. If you have like an infection in your body or something going on the inside, that's stressful for the body. Your phone pinging every second is setting off, you know, as your system is still noticing, oh, there's someone asking me to do something and needing something from me, which can also cause a lot of stress. And most of us are on our phone all of the time or have it with us all of the time. So we are like constantly getting kind of triggered. So many of us are living in a state of what we call chronic stress. So instead of like having an immediate thing happen where we get stressed and then we chill back down, which is what we're supposed to do, and that's healthy and we should have those reactions happening, we're stressed out all the time. So that means our blood is pumping to our limbs as if we're going to, you know, fight or flight, run away from something. And it's not in our digestive system. It's not in our reproductive system. So we're not digesting our food as well. We're not sleeping as well. We might not have the easiest time having babies. All of this can go back to being stressed all the time.
And then the one I think about a lot these days is the environment.
For sure.
And the stress of the environment. And, you know, let's just take New York City, for example.
Oh, yeah.
The noise pollution, the air pollution, all of those things.
Yeah, people don't sort of realize how much we're exposed to today versus just what our grandparents were exposed to.
So aside from being an author, tell us what your job is today.
Yeah, so I am a health coach, a certified health coach, which means I do a lot of different things. But one of the things I do is that I work with people one-on-one, helping them with health, diet, lifestyle changes, usually over a period of time. So we'll work together for 4 months or 6 months, really implementing healthy habits that hopefully they don't need me at the end of our work together. That's really my goal. And then I also do some consulting work. I help with some, you know, some restaurants with their menus, things like that, which is really fun.
And do you work in conjunction with traditional doctors?
No, I have worked for a long time with a functional medicine doctor, which works better with what I do because they're much more open to the idea that food is medicine and that lifestyle changes, dealing with your stress, exercise, all that stuff is really what's crucial in healing or preventing disease, which is even more important.
So before I talked to you, I didn't even know that there was a thing called a functional medicine doctor.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that every doctor should be a functional medicine doctor.
Yeah.
But I remember, like, not recently, but back when I was working at other magazines and had a big corporate job and was like stressed a lot.
Uh-huh.
I would go to the doctor and they would immediately want to prescribe something. And I was always surprised that they didn't first ask, how are you sleeping? What are you eating? What's going on in your life? It was just, I don't feel well, straight for the pill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely feel like that is changing, and it's changing with, you know, how our awareness is changing as patients, but it's also changing just because the diseases and the trouble that we're dealing with is changing. It's not necessarily as much an acute infection that we go to the doctor for. It's like, I have chronic headaches, or I'm not pooping, or, you know, like these kinds of problems that are not such traditional quick fix problems. And so for those types of problems, we need someone to get to the bottom of it. What's the root cause here? And often it can be helped or even fixed completely by changing your diet, changing the way you're sleeping, changing your stress, all of that. So, and that's wonderful. If we can fix someone's problem in those very low impact ways and not have them dependent on medicine for the rest of their life, that's just amazing. So I think there are more and more doctors coming up now who maybe of a younger generation, you know, who are much more open to this.
And that's I'm happy to hear
great.
That
I definitely see there's a big change happening for sure.
So is it the fact that everybody is just so stressed out these days and life is so crazy that adaptogens have become a big thing? Because I do, they've been around for thousands of years, but why all of a sudden have they become so popular, so buzzy, people are so curious about them?
Yeah, I think there's an accumulation of different things. There's definitely the fact that, yes, people are stressed. People are not sleeping well. There's these common threads that a lot of people are dealing with, and they're looking for more sustainable, healthier alternatives to pharmaceutical medication. So I think that is part of it. People are more aware of what those kinds of things can do to you with long-term use, and they're looking for options. I also think there's been some companies out there who've seen that and really packaged it well and educating people and make it kind of cool and chic and accessible by just branding and marketing it in a way where it's like, oh, this is for sleep. Okay, I can buy this now.
I do think the good thing of all of this is that it's opening people's eyes to the fact that there are alternative options out there for them, and not everything has to be a pill, a pharmaceutical. And not that there's anything wrong with traditional medicine.
No, absolutely. And thank God we have doctors when we break our arms or
100%, or have cancer. I mean, you know, doctors save lives. There's no way around it. But I do think it's good to just know that there are options out there for you.
Yeah.
And to question things. I think that's the other thing. There's nothing wrong with questioning things and looking at alternatives.
No, ask your doctor, how about if I did this? Is that safe? Can I try that? And, you know, the thing with adaptogens, for example, and one of the questions that came up on our talk at Books Are Magic was, you know, is this any time that I can't take this? And sure, there are moments where, like, oh, you're on certain medications where this is actually contraindicated. You shouldn't be taking it. So it's always bring it up to your doctor, and especially if you're dealing with specific issues or on medication already. But starting to ask questions and bringing their attention to it as well, and tell them how it's helping you if it is.
Yeah.
Because doctors are always there. I mean, their job is to listen. And if they don't listen, find another one. If you tell them, oh, I've been taking CBD for sleep instead of what you prescribed, and it's working even better, so is it okay if I go off what you prescribed? And I mean, most doctors would be very okay with that. And they would love hearing those kind of stories, I think. I think
there
are more
on
open.
The doctor.
Yeah. But I do think many are now are more open-minded, and they're sort of also, you know, they're living in this world. They have to keep their eyes open and see what's happening.
But one thing I wonder is why do people come down so heavy on the Gwyneth Paltrows of the world, on the Amanda Chantal Bacons? So for those listeners who don't know her, she's the founder of a company called Moon Juice out in California. And they started as a juice company, but now they do lots of different things, supplements and powders.
Yeah.
People are so critical of them and call them snake oil salespeople and all of that.
I know.
But why aren't people as critical of like Coca-Cola or McDonald's? I mean, I think they're doing more harm.
For sure.
For not just Americans, the whole world. But I don't see the people behind those brands attacked on the same level that like a Gwyneth or an Amanda are attacked in the media.
Yeah.
And in the comments
section.
It
is very interesting. I mean, there's no doubt that these big, big corporations have a lot of power and a lot of money, you know, so they can silence a lot of things and hide a lot of things. And they're very powerful in terms of their media coverage and what media is sort of willing to see and ignore, depending on
right, because they pay for all the advertising,
all of that. So it's complicated, and you know, our healthcare system is complicated, and pharmaceutical companies are also very powerful, and they don't want people to know about these natural alternatives that are just as good as their drugs, because that means people aren't going to be buying their drugs anymore. So I think there's a lot of that. But I also think, you know, those are both two examples of two beautiful, strong women who are not afraid to say what they believe in, to stand up for themselves, to get out there. And I'm so impressed with them, because that is not easy.
Yeah. And how much of it is the fact that they're women?
Right.
Challenging these really big industries.
It's time.
It is time.
Yes.
It is time.
Yeah.
Damn it. All right. Let's talk about some adaptogens.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what some of the more common ones are.
Sure. So many have heard of things like maca and goji berries. And
so goji berries are adaptogens.
They are an adaptogen.
Ooh, who knew?
Yes.
You. Yes, I knew.
I
didn't know.
But they're also sort of referred to as just a general superfood because they're really high in vitamins and antioxidants, and they're great for, they're a great energy boost. I usually have them around. As,
are all adaptogens superfoods?
No. So they're, well, I mean, you could probably say that, but okay, a superfood is really seen as like a really intensely nutritious, nutrient dense, right? So that can also include things like liver and oysters if you want to, or chia seeds, or so there's a whole bunch of foods that you, I would say, are very nutrient dense. So eating just a little bit of it will give you a lot of nutrition.
Okay.
You know.
So they're all good for you, they're just not interchangeable in
right,
terms of the definition. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So back to adaptogens, maca.
Yeah,
you said.
Common one, great for hormone health.
Goji berries.
Yeah, goji berries is a common one people have heard about. Ashwagandha, you might have seen around a lot, which is a really, I think that's a great sort of first adaptogen to try. Other ones you've heard of, some of the mushrooms, like reishi is quite common. It's actually one of the most studied plants on the planet. So even though these things are seen as sort of woohoo and out there, you know, the scientists are aware there's something here that we need to look at.
What have they uncovered about reishi?
So reishi is great for immunity and it's generally really calming. So it's a great thing to take, you know, at night if you're trying to help yourself sleep better or deeper. A lot of the adaptogens are especially being studied right now for their immune system regulation, their immune benefits, because so many people are dealing with immune issues, autoimmune diseases, and cancer and chemotherapy and bouncing back from chemotherapy. So they're doing a lot of research on adaptogens and some of these mushrooms around that topic. So we'll see in a few years what they're revealing for us, but I'm hopeful.
This episode is presented by Henry's Wine and Spirit, a go-to shop for anyone interested in natural wines and boutique spirits. There's a large selection of everything from orange wines, pet nats, and reds from around the world. Whether visiting the shop in person or online, looking for a gift for a loved one, or that everyday dependable bottle, you're sure to find lots of interesting wines at Henry's. There's free shipping on orders over $300 on the website henrys.nyc, and case discounts when you visit the store located in Bushwick. Cheers.
Let's talk about how you can incorporate these into your life. I would like to know how you incorporate them into your life, but then I'd also like to know how to do it as a beginner
right,
to this.
Yeah.
So let's start with you.
Yeah, I still consider myself a beginner. I went on this journey writing this book because I was intrigued by these. So I'm still experimenting with many of them and using them in new ways and all of that. So I would still say I'm a pretty much a beginner, although it's, you know, it's been a little while. The first time I took adaptogens was probably 10 years ago, but then I was taking it, you know, simply as a supplement, as a pill, and that's totally fine to do that too. It was sort of recommended to me, I guess, by an acupuncturist at that point. So I've been taking it for a long time, but sort of incorporating more into my everyday sort of rituals and routines, a little bit newer. But I often just add it to my coffee in the morning or my matcha in the morning.
Everyone at the bookstore the other day was surprised to learn you drink coffee.
Right.
No one was surprised that you drink matcha.
Right.
But people were surprised you drink coffee.
I know. It's like a love-hate relationship. I definitely can't have too much of it, but I do love the whole smell and I love the taste of it. And of course, I like the little boost in the morning. I have two very young kids. So right now, coffee's my friend, but now and then I give it breaks, which I do think is a good thing to do.
I'm full on pro coffee, obviously. I own a coffee shop.
Oh, yeah.
What do you put in your coffee or your matcha?
So I'll put astragalus, which at least in the fall and winter season, very immune boosting. So that's really important right now. I also put mucuna pruriens most of the time, which is a real mood booster. It has this dopamine effect, which is really cool. So you feel kind of a mood lift, and it also can help you have more vivid dreams and just sleep deeper, which is great.
How about throughout the rest of the day? What do you take?
So I might in the afternoon have like a snack with some like matcha in it, like a matcha snack bowl or something that also has some good fat and little nuts and maybe some made with some dates or something sweet. I definitely have a sweet tooth. I love snacking on goji berries throughout the day if I need a little energy. They're great for that. And then at night I will have usually like a maybe like a turmeric latte thing with a few adaptogens added, like reishi that's calming. If I haven't had my astragalus in the morning, I'll add that then. And then, yeah, lots of turmeric for just nice anti-inflammatory, and it's generally calming and wonderfully tasting. So I love that.
No, I love those golden milk lattes.
Yeah.
I'll make them from time to time with turmeric and ginger.
Yeah.
And we were talking about, are they adaptogens? Are they superfoods? Right. What are they? Who decides what's an adaptogen?
Yeah, who decides? That's the real big question. I don't know if anyone, if there's a jury out there who gets to decide what's an adaptogen or not. But
I said it's like the people who pick the emojis.
Right.
There's some council out there. We don't know who they are. But they're picking the adaptogens too, I think.
Yeah, maybe the same guy. That would be really funny. Turmeric is not an adaptogen because it doesn't have that ability to help the body better adapt to stress. However, it's certainly a superfood. It's really anti-inflammatory. So it's great for many other reasons, but it's not considered an adaptogen.
If you are out there listening to Radio Cherry Bomb and you haven't made anything with turmeric yet, what are you waiting for? I want to hear from you. I want to find the one person out there who hasn't
done anything. Yeah, and that's a great example of it's a real food, right? It's been around forever. It's in a ton of different recipes. It's been used for a long time. People have known about its benefit. And also the way it's been used and prepared traditionally is also the way that turmeric is best absorbed. So it's usually in a stew where it's been cooked with something fatty, with, you know, coconut milk or whatever.
Ghee, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And there's always some pepper added and some chili and some spices. So that makes it more bioavailable to our body. So we're more likely to actually absorb those benefits that we want from it.
One of the big criticisms of adaptogens and that whole world that it represents is the expense, and
sure,
that it's something reserved for people who have money and the time and all of that. Mm-hmm. If you are curious about these things, they are expensive. How do you get into it?
Yeah,
You're of modest means.
Totally. No, I completely get that. It's a little overwhelming. And I certainly, having to do the research for this book, spent a good chunk of my advance.
I can imagine. I mean, I was in a health food store and I picked up a thing of reishi and it was $50.
Right.
And I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a huge range here. There is definitely some, you know, you can get big bags of maca for $15, or you can get a small jar of reishi for $50. So there's a huge variety. There's a couple of things to keep in mind. First of all, you don't need a lot. So like a quarter teaspoon a day is probably a great dose to start with, which means that jar might last you like a year. Even though it seems like a lot up front, you know, spread over taking it every single day, it's not a huge investment. So that's something to remember. There are also other places to get this stuff from. You want to make sure you're getting it from a trusted source, but going to your local herbal shop, if you have something like that where you live. There's also a great resource online, Mountain Rose Herbs, where you can buy all of these adaptogens and a lot of different herbs and flowers and things like that in bulk. And they're organic. They're really transparent about their sourcing. You know, you can get beautiful rose petals there. You can buy different teas and like chamomile, for example. But you can also buy a lot of the adaptogens there in bulk or even whole. So you can buy a whole reishi mushroom or slices of reishi, and then you can grind it yourself, which saves you a lot of money.
And you probably shouldn't go overboard. Like I can see the temptation out there to like buy a few of them, and next thing you know, you've got a latte with like 10 superfoods and adaptogens in it, and you're like, oh God, what did I just do?
Yeah.
So start small, right?
Start small. Start with one of them. And I say that in the book too, like pick one or maybe two, and then you have to stick with it for a while. If you're going to really notice if it's doing anything for you, one time just isn't going to be enough to tell you. So stick with it for a month or two, and then you might tell, oh, I'm not as stressed out like I was last month. So adaptogens can be really powerful like that, but you have to stick with it.
Well, the book is great. It is such a good beginner guide to adaptogens and powders.
Thank you.
And the recipes are really fun.
Yeah, they're definitely fun and easy. I'm not a chef. I'm a home cook and I don't have a lot of time. So most of the recipes definitely reflect that.
I'm definitely trying the hot chocolate one this weekend because I think we're going to get a little snow. What can you walk us through that one?
Yeah, so you just warm the milk and then you stir in the powders. It's so easy, and that's really it. And you can sweeten it, but if you don't want to sweeten it, you don't have to.
And what kind of chocolate do you use in it? Is it cacao?
I use raw cacao powder, which has a lot more antioxidants in it because it hasn't been heated and altered. So that's my go-to for, you know, for the most sort of nutrition benefits. And I love chocolate, so I have bags of it.
All right, we're going to do the speed round. I'm going to try to remember it off the top of my head. What song makes you smile?
Oh, that's a tough one. I mean, right now, it's probably Baby Shark.
Baby Shark? I don't even know that song.
Well, any mom or parent out there will know exactly what I'm talking about because all the kids love this song and it's horrible. But the, like my daughter who's 21 months, if I play the song, she just starts dancing. She does this shark movement with her hands. She like wigs her, like moves her hips around. She's so adorable. And of course that will make me smile.
Okay, wait.
So the song is awful, but what it does to my daughter is
You
adorable.
Know I need to ask you to sing that song now.
Baby shark, do 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 do. And just goes on and on like that.
Why is it awful? Because it's just a hideous like song that, or yeah, the lyrics
like,
are bad?
It wasn't meant to be a pop song, but it's become this whole phenomenon.
Oh my gosh. Okay, love. I somehow missed the baby shark phenomenon. I'm going to...
Yeah, you are lucky.
I'm going to Google.
I'm going to not... Don't play it. Because it'll just stay in your head forever.
All right. What is your purse snack of choice?
Ooh. Probably like a tart green Granny Smith apple. Or goji berries, definitely. And I
usually
have.
Knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, I love them. And I also usually have some sort of pack of nuts or like a squeezy pack of almond butter, something like that.
Okay. Last book you read or attempted to read?
Yeah, I was scared you were going to ask me this. I have two young kids. I don't read books besides work-related things. So probably the last book I read was The Four Tendencies by Gretchen Rubin, which is all about like habit forming and different people's tendencies. It's super interesting, especially as someone who coaches people. It's super helpful to understand how someone's habits can kind of stick, what they need. So learning about myself, like, oh, I'm someone who needs that accountability versus like my husband, who's a rebel. Who's like, he needs the opposite of that.
What is your most used kitchen implement?
The Vitamix.
Dream vacation destination?
I want to go back to Thailand. I haven't been in 15 years.
And that's where you met your husband.
Yes. And it's probably changed so much that I won't even recognize it. But
all right. And our last question. If you had to be stuck on a desert island with any food celebrity, who would it be?
Gwyneth Paltrow? I think she's really brave. I really like her cookbooks, actually. As someone who has had a lot of food intolerances, she has a lot of recipes that are free of certain things that can be difficult for a lot of people and for my clients as well who are trying to live dairy-free or gluten-free or whatever it is. There's like a lot of great, still really delicious, nutritious recipes. But I also think she's like seems like a really fun person.
Well, if you and Gwyneth get stuck on a desert island, keep a diary and we'll publish it in Cherry Bomb magazine.
We will be having adaptogens. Definitely. She's on board.
I expect nothing less.
Nope.
Well, Katrina, thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's been so fun getting to know you. And thank you for doing Cherry Bomb University
last year. Oh, yeah. That was so fun. That was great. I hope you're doing it again.
I think we are. So okay, stay tuned. And thanks for putting that book out into the world. It's a subject that people are very curious about. And you've done a really beautiful job explaining it in a way that's understandable. So,
thank you. That was certainly my goal. So I'm glad you say that. Thank you.
All right. Bye, Katrina.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed my chat with Katrina. Now let's talk about Hannah Habes, the founder of Matcheful. As I had mentioned earlier, Hannah was also dealing with some stress-related issues. Things were so bad, she was actually losing her hair. A friend introduced her to matcha, and it was the wake-up call she needed. She fell in love with the special powdered green tea from Japan, started making lifestyle changes, and got her health back. She also decided to make matcha her mission. She sells organic matcha online and works with coffee shops that feature matcha, like my coffee shop in Brooklyn, Smith Canteen. It's some of the best matcha I've ever had. Hannah also has two matcha shops in New York City. Enjoy our conversation. Do you remember where you had your very first cup of matcha?
Oh, yeah. I remember very well. I was in my home in Portland, and I just remember I had received a gift, so like a ritual set from a friend in Japan. And it just couldn't have come at a better time. I was working for a huge CPG food company.
We looked at your LinkedIn
account.
We fully stalked you before you got here.
So good. And it was a little eye-opening. I mean, you know, you work for these big companies and you see how decisions get made, and it's not about ingredients. It's about the bottom line, you know, and I was consuming so much packaged food, heavily, heavily processed food. And I just started noticing my body sort of deteriorating.
So did you grow up that way?
I did. I grew up eating like terribly, but I was really active. My mom worked for Nike. My dad was my tennis coach. So I was, it wasn't until in my 20s when I kind of slowed down being active and living this, like, you know, in college, I was still working out. And when I got a full-time job, I kind of stopped. And, you know, I was still eating growing up healthy things as well, but definitely packaged foods as well. But I would say when I started working for this big company, I kind of quit any healthy eating and just was only eating, you know, chips and granola bars and you name it. And I think in my 20s, I kind of started all of a sudden, you know, our bodies go through changes. You know, I started becoming more dairy intolerant. I started having all of these digestive issues. I found out sort of going to a family dinner later that year with my sisters that they were also actually having similar problems. So all around the same time, we were developing these, you know, sort of intolerances that we had never had in our, you know, throughout our childhood.
Did you go to a doctor?
I did. I went to several doctors because I had a ton of hair loss that I couldn't figure out. And, you know, it is a vanity thing when you have hair loss, but it's not necessarily, but it really affects
your
self-esteem.
But as a woman, that's even more devastating than when a guy has
and
hair loss.
It was really
tough. And you
were
tough. So young.
Yeah. It was in my early 20s. And so, you know, I saw all these doctors and they ran all these tests and, you know, I had some like iron deficiencies. I definitely think I was going through a period of just a lot of stress too. And I think my diet was contributing to that because I wasn't exercising. You know, I just wasn't as happy and I was having more stress and hormonal issues that maybe the doctor couldn't see from their typical blood test reports that they were, you know, taking. So,
and the irony being you're working for a big company, so you probably had pretty good health insurance.
Yeah. Yeah, I had great health insurance. I could see any doctor.
So they work you to death.
Yep.
But they make sure you have the good health insurance.
Work you to death. Yeah. I was drinking a ton of coffee. I mean, I was on the road a lot because I was in sales. So I was traveling. And yeah, the last thing I was thinking about was what I was eating.
When did you have the light bulb moment that either I want to know more about matcha or I want to make matcha my business?
Every day after work, I would go online and just research as much as I could about clean eating, diet, like what I could do, not necessarily dieting, but just how I could change what I was, you know, doing every day. And that was when matcha sort of came into my life. I found myself, you know, after I drank it, I remember telling my mom, I was like, Mom, I just feel like this is what I need to be doing. And, you know, she was like, Hannah, don't quit your day job, which most moms would probably say. And I just knew that I had to do something with it. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I knew that I was passionate enough. And I started telling all of my friends, you know, I was like this matcha missionary where everyone, you know, I would be at a party and then I'd find myself telling, you know, everybody at the party about matcha. And so
you're like me with reusable cups.
Yeah. When you're so passionate about something, it's all you can think about.
So how long did it take from there to the creation of Matchaful, the company?
It took a while. So I got another job still in the food industry and with a smaller sort of family-owned company that was, you know, to this day I look back and I'm so grateful I had that experience. But moved to New York with them and I kept sort of this exploration and passion around matcha, but, you know, I kept my day job. And so when I moved to New York, I started kind of looking at the market, trying to figure out what I could do. And around that time, had the realization that, you know, maybe it would be easiest, not easiest, but sort of maybe the best way for me to test matcha would be to go to coffee shops and to help them, you know, bring it to their menu.
When did you come up with the name Matchaful?
So Matchaful, so I actually didn't launch until, you know, a year after I started sort of calling on, I actually didn't even have a brand. I was just kind of importing matcha. Matchaful came about really because when I was writing down all the different things that matcha sort of made me feel, it was like, you know, healthful, mindful, just all of these words that sort of came to mind. And that's how it was born.
So you had a side hustle. You were importing matcha.
Mm-hmm.
Had you gone to Japan at that point?
Yeah. I didn't have a lot of capital to go to Japan, but I did make one trip.
That was a big question. Like, how have you funded all this?
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't have a lot of capital at first. And honestly, I bootstrapped the company so hard. And thank God I sort of didn't quit my day job, because it did help me pay my rent. And, you know, sometimes when you are so passionate about something, you just want to quit everything and start immediately.
So you go on this first trip to Japan. How in the world did you get these people to trust you, to be willing to work with you, give you their product?
Yeah.
You're this white girl who shows up in Japan, your first trip there.
Yeah. You know, I remember the first night I showed up in Japan, it was like the first three restaurants I went into, they kind of were like, no, sorry, like too full, or they'd say something else. And,
wow.
And that was hard.
So gosh, if the restaurateurs don't even want your business, how did you convince farmers?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was the passion, that it wasn't just, you know, this person coming and trying to make a business or make a dollar off of them. They're very genuine, and they believe in relationships, especially business people. It is all about relationships, and they really value you coming and actually being there and seeing their operations and spending time with them. So I was a little nervous going into them, because they were mostly men. In fact, I'd say they were all men, but there was a shared sort of mutual respect for the tea.
So you're importing matcha. You're just randomly calling on these coffee shops, trying to convince them to use this matcha you're importing.
Yep.
How is that going?
First, so I'm not going to lie, the first like couple months was not easy. And I was going to these coffee shops, and they knew this was in New York City, where now you almost go into most coffee shops have a matcha offering. But this was back in 2013, so 5 years ago. And these coffee shops, it was like, no way. I mean, A, we're going to, like, this is a whole new process for us. This is going to slow down, you know. This is going to take away from our workers' focus of making coffee. Because as you know, matcha is not just a steep tea. It's not just a tea bag. It's now, you know, putting powder and hand whisking. And it's a process. So I got a lot of no's at first. A lot of no's. It wasn't until I had a couple coffee shops kind of take a chance and say, okay, let's test it for a week or two and see how it goes. And, you know, there's one coffee shop I specifically remember in Soho. And, you know, the guy who's still a customer of ours was like, yeah, let's try it. It was my first yes. And I just remember, you know, I went in there like to kind of check up, and every week I'd go in, I'd see more green cups. And he said, yeah, it's picking up. And week over week, it started picking up. So at that point, it was a good win and a good feeling that, okay, something's working here.
When were you confident enough to quit the day job?
It took a while. I had my day job for a year. So I waited until essentially I was bringing in enough money where I could start kind of paying myself a little tiny bit. And you know, even then it was hard to make ends meet, but I was busy enough where I felt like, okay, this I can make a full-time job out of this. I had probably like 30 accounts at that point.
So let's talk about the matcha full product.
Sure.
Because it's not just your random matcha.
Yeah. And that was really...
Which you could have done.
Right.
But you decided...
Just, yeah. I could have just had some awesome brand with some, like, you know, decent matcha, but that wasn't my sort of intent. And I was really passionate about trying to develop, like, a direct relationship with a farmer. And that took a little while, because obviously it's not easy to go direct to the farm. As with any commodity that you source, there's brokers involved, there's bigger tea makers involved. So, you know, the first product I launched was with a bigger tea maker. But I wanted to start thinking more like a coffee brand would. It was, you know, I want to go direct trade. I want to figure out how we go direct to a farmer. And so I did, you know, I went to tea expos. A woman on my team who's Japanese started reaching out to like the head of agriculture in Japan to do some research on how we could start working with more directly with a farmer. And, you know, there's not a lot of farmers. The interesting thing about matcha is there's not a lot of farmers in Japan that sell directly themselves. they'll just sell to a bigger tea maker. And then the tea maker will kind of mix. They'll blend up matcha from different farms. And then you kind of lose sight where it comes from. I didn't want to just be sourcing this matcha that had I had no transparency into where it was coming from. And so we found this farmer. And this was back in 2015, 2016. We found a farmer who was doing everything. He was innovative and he was going direct and he was using solar panels to shade grow the matcha. So he was kind of bringing alternative energy to his community and just everything about his story and how he was growing the matcha, I just fell in love with. And we really just bonded over my passion for matcha and his passion for growing. And we now have a couple of his grades of matcha that we carry at Matchful that kind of are our best-selling items now.
Walk us through the different grades that you have.
A lot of people have heard the word ceremonial, right? So ceremonial is kind of this like buzzword in the U.S. now. The funny thing is when I go to Japan, Japanese people are like, what does ceremonial mean? And I'm like, well, I guess this is a made-up term.
Right, because we see ceremonial or culinary.
Or culinary, yep. So it's ceremonial or culinary. And ceremonial, it should mean that it's a high enough grade where you can drink it. So it could be used for a tea ceremony. It's going to be smooth. It should taste, you know, less bitter. It should also have higher concentrations of L-theanine, but culinary matcha is, you know, it's going to be a little more bitter. It's going to be definitely cheaper. It's the leaves that are sort of more matured and just don't retain as much of the like sweetness. The ceremonial leaves. So there's a couple harvests in Japan. The first harvest is where the best ceremonial leaves come from. If you're drinking matcha, I would say like go for the ceremonial grade because, you know, you've tried, Carrie, like you can tell a difference when there's, you know, this bitter matcha versus something that's really smooth. And, you know, a lot of people will have culinary matcha and they think that's, you know, what matcha is. And it's sad because it makes me sad because that's not the experience that you can have with matcha. So ceremonial first harvest, the baby leaves are used for ceremonial grades. So that means, you know, they're sort of sweeter. They're at the top of the plant. They have higher concentrations of amino acids. And then culinary is more of like second and third harvest. So Japan has a couple different harvests throughout the year. The best leaves are picked in like May for the first harvest.
And you've participated in harvest.
Yeah, that's when I typically try to go.
How do you drink your matcha in the morning?
So I'm sort of a purist. I kind of keep it simple. I do like mostly matcha and water, and then I'll kind of top it off with a touch of fresh almond milk. So that's how I do it.
Do you cook with matcha?
I do a little bit. I don't cook with it as much as other people do because I kind of like to drink it and have it that way. But I've had some incredible like creations that people have made with matcha. Like I've had a matcha vegan cheesecake recently that was incredible.
You are part of this growing number of young women who are launching these businesses who want to disrupt the way things have been done previously. You know, when we were reading up on your story, I was thinking of my friend Ashwarya, who has Brightland, the olive oil company.
Okay.
I don't know if you know about her, but I feel like there are a lot of parallels to your story because we were reading about how some matcha brands are not great. You know, just because it says matcha, like things have been added to it. It's not organic. It's not definitely not single origin. I mean, you're specializing in that, but not everyone does. And you really wanted a product that you could vouch for and get behind. And same with Ashwarya. She had read all of this about how olive oil is adulterated with other things. And she just wanted a pure product from California that was beautiful. But I feel like we're meeting more and more people who are trying to do that in their individual categories. Mm-hmm. What is it about today that you've got people like you who care so much about the product and want to do things differently than how it had been done?
Yeah, I think it's different for every entrepreneur and sort of why they do it. For me, it was like I saw kind of the other side of it, of working for a huge company and not thinking about the ingredients or whether it was organic. You know, as a consumer, I want to change things and just selfishly make it better for not only myself, but for everyone, because I've been on the other side and I've seen what crappy, shitty ingredients can do to your body. I think, you know, I love that we're kind of in this wave. And when I started in the CPG world, the food industry, 10 years ago, it was all, I mean, you would walk into a grocery store and it was every name brand. And what's so cool now is when you walk into a grocery store, it's all of these like niche brands. And that's just like, that gives me, still gives me goosebumps, because we keep reversing and we keep kind of going in this direction of wanting to do things right and more authentically and more transparently. And so I love that we're sort of headed, I think we continue to be headed in that direction. And I think in the future, it's, you know, every consumer should have the right to know where their food is coming from.
And people like you are disrupting the big CPG companies, because they're really responding now and looking at the brands that they're acquiring,
yeah,
what's in their products. I mean, the change has been slow, yeah, but I think they are getting beaten up. And I mean, you read, yeah, this in the papers every day. They're getting beaten up in terms of sales and what customers want today.
I know. And that's why they keep acquiring these, like, they just have to keep acquiring companies to kind of stay relevant, because the brands that they, you know, originally had aren't doing as well anymore.
You're a disruptor.
Thank you.
All right. So, Hannah, we're going to do the speed round. And we used to ask people coffee or tea, but we know the answer with Hannah.
Mm-hmm.
Coffee or tea?
Tea. All the way.
What song makes you smile?
My Girl came to mind. Don't know why.
Treasured cookbook.
I love, my best friend is a cookbook writer and Simply Real Health out of Washington. So that's kind of what got me into clean eating. So,
most used kitchen implement?
A lemon squeezer.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, that's a good one. I should get one of those.
Yeah.
Purse snack of choice. I still can't say purse snack. It doesn't flow. But anyway, purse snack.
Little bags of popcorn. I'll eat those. Like the healthy.
You carry around little bags of popcorn.
Like the grab and go popcorn. Like the healthy kind. Yeah.
No candy bars in your bag.
No candy bars. Although I do love the, like, the dark chocolate, like quinoa crunch by the Theo
You're
brand.
So good, Hannah.
I know.
Dream vacation destination?
Ooh, Croatia.
If you had to be trapped on a desert island with any food celebrity, who would it be?
Let's go with Martha Stewart.
Okay, you got to say why.
Well, I just heard her speak, and she's like, she's a hoot. So I feel like she'd be kind of fun, and I'd learn just everything from her. So, yeah.
I wonder if she would do everything or delegate.
Yeah, she'd probably delegate. I'd probably be like working for her. But that's okay. That's way I'm learning. I'm learning under Martha Stewart. So I'm okay with that.
Good. All right. Well, Hannah, thank you so much. It's been wonderful getting to know you. Yeah. It's also been really nice working with you.
Yeah.
And
same.
Thank you for putting a beautiful product out into the world. Because
thank you for supporting our product.
Personally love it, and our guests do too.
Thanks so much.
That's it for today's show. A huge thank you to Katrina Van Wyk for talking adaptogens with us. If you want to know more, be sure to pick up her new book titled Super Powders. And thank you to Hannah Habes of Matchaful for sharing her journey with us. Visit matchaful.com, or if you're in New York City, head to Hannah's Matchaful shops in Dumbo or Soho. Hannah will be making a special guest appearance at Smith Canteen in the weeks ahead, so stay tuned for that. You can come hang out with us and try some Matchaful matcha. Thank you to our sponsor, Hanson Brook Farm, for supporting this season of Radio Cherry Bomb. Special thanks to our associate producer and our very own Riot Girl, Jess Seidman. And thank you to the band Cha La La for our theme song. Don't forget to sign up for our new newsletter, The Bomb Squad Buzz. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and the Heritage Radio Network. Thanks for listening, everybody. You're the bomb.
I'll have what she's having. Hi, I'm Rebecca, the author of the cookie book and creator of Displaced Housewife, and I live in California. Do you know who I think is the bomb? Zoe Francois, the amazing baker and pastry chef behind the blog Zoe Bakes and the co-author of the awesome Bread and Five cookbook series. Zoe is not only extremely talented, her work is so inspiring, and she always makes me want to get in the kitchen and make something beautiful.